Hi, my name's Russell Norman, and welcome to Blue Marble Storytellers, bringing you great stories from around the globe. On this episode, we bring you a great story by Robert Burns called Roses Are Red. This story was a finalist entry in the crime section of the Global Soup 7-Day Story Writing Challenge competition. We talked to Robert about this win, along with other winners, on episode 37 of the Read Lots, Write Lots podcast. Please enjoy.
The apartment was like all the others in this part of Brooklyn. Same dingy paint on the walls, threadbare rug on the floor, bare incandescent bulb hanging from the ceiling. Deja vu. The body lay in the middle of the room in a pool of blood. The roommate sat in the corner, blood on her, too. She hugged her knees, eyes fixed on the body, and rocked slowly as she choked back quiet sobs. As expected, a dozen roses sat on the kitchen table, except this time there were 8 red and 4 white. The 8th murder. Even though we were all becoming numb, the killings continued to get harder to stomach. I pushed back the gray fedora from my face and scratched my forehead. This is getting old. Dr. Arnold glanced up from where he knelt next to the victim. You can say that again, Tom. Too old. This one was slashed like all the others. I approached the roommate. She was a young woman, not unlike the victim. Well, except for being alive. I squatted next to the radiator. It was cold that night, and the heat felt good. Miss, my name's Detective Sergeant Tom Pullman. I need to ask you a few questions. What's your name, miss? Looking up from her roommate, she stopped rocking. Her tear-stained eyes met mine. What? Your name? Sophie. Sophie Broussard. You lived here with the deceased? Yes, I came home from work, and when I walked in, I saw this man stabbing Natalie. I screamed, and he just kept stabbing and stabbing. Oh, God. The blood was everywhere. Oh, God. Poor Natalie. She buried her face in her arms and sobbed, trembling. I grabbed a woolen throw from the sofa and pulled it around her shoulders. I had to press. I hated this part of the job. And you always come home from work around, checking my watch, 2 a.m.? What? Yes. And what do you do? I'm a dancer at the Rialto. Natalie worked there too. I see. And Miss Stanhope wasn't working tonight? No, she's off on Tuesdays. And what happened after you witnessed the stabbing? He just kept stabbing and stabbing. When he saw me, he rushed past me out the door and pushed me out of his way. I tripped and fell. The blood was everywhere. She held her arms out in front of her and noticed the blood on her hands. Oh, God. Stay with me, Miss Broussard. Stay with me, Miss Broussard. Did you know him? Get a good look at his face? No, his hat was pulled down. I didn't see anything. Maybe that's why he let you live, I said to myself. Then out loud, and when did the flowers come? They were delivered this morning. The card said Natalie, but she said she had no idea who they were from. Did they run out of red? I suppressed a smile. No, I don't think so. Well, then why the white roses? Let's get you cleaned up, I said, changing the subject. I'm going to have a patrolman take you to a hotel. You can't stay here. I helped her to her feet and led her slowly to the hallway, into the capable hands of Officer O'Malley. Be gentle with her, Joe, I said under my breath. She's our first witness. Later that morning, I swiveled in my chair down at the precinct. The papers called him the Red Rose Killer, one murder a week for 8 weeks. The roses were the physical manifestation of a deadly obsession. It started with one red rose and 11 white, then 2 red and 10. The last had been 7 red and 5 white, which brought us to number 8. The victims were all young, single women, working in, shall we say, unsavory professions. Exotic dancers and call girls mostly, although there was one nightclub singer and one masseuse. All were peroxide blondes. I kept thinking about Sophie Broussard. She's one lucky dame, Joe. A natural blonde to boot. You think? We figured she surprised the killer, and he must have been afraid her scream would rouse the neighbors. What dumb luck. He couldn't have known she hadn't seen his face. This was a case where all the details aligned so perfectly that one little thing out of place would have made all the difference. Sophie was the beneficiary this time. I walked down the corridor to interrogation. Sophie's lip quivered as she watched me push the door close. Don't worry, miss, just a few more questions. I'm sorry to have to put you through all this. It's okay, she sipped her coffee, holding the paper cup with two delicate hands. Even though her eyes were swollen from crying all night, they were breathtaking. The purest blue I'd ever seen. Cobalt. Is the hotel all right? I asked. It's fine, just don't make me go back to that awful apartment. You don't have to. I held her hand and walked her through the events of the night before. Her hands were warmer than I thought they'd be. I felt for her, the innocent survivor of an unspeakably horrible crime. We talked for hours, bonding over sludgy black coffee. I needed to know all her details, how her mind worked. I told myself that it was just part of the investigation. The next week, another victim. This one turned up in a fourth-floor walk-up in Flatbush, a hooker, 9 Red Roses. I kept inventing excuses to see Sophie Broussard, to be alone with her. There was something about her that was getting under my skin. My heart raced when she looked at me, her beautiful face, blue eyes, ruby lips. We were still working on the Stanhope murder, along with all the others, so it wasn't really all that unusual that we were spending so much time together. I went back and re-interviewed the superintendent in Sophie's apartment building. He was the one who first called the police. Something about his story just wasn't quite right. So, Mr. Grimaldi, you heard screams that night? Yeah, it was about 2:15. I jumped out of bed, and when I got up to the apartment, the door was ajar, so I pushed it open. That's when I saw the blood. It was everywhere. He spoke with a little gleam in his eye, a little too much of a gleam. Then what? Then I went to the hall phone and called the cops. You didn't think to help the girl in shock sitting in the corner. I didn't want to get anywhere near her. I scribbled down a few notes. Don't leave town, Mr. Grimaldi. Back at the precinct, I picked up the incident report for number 8. Incident. Now there's an understatement. O'Malley had been first on the scene, and I pored over his report, searching for any details that might seem out of place. I had nothing. The following Tuesday, the 10th Red Rose showed up in the apartment of a burlesque dancer over on 24th Street. The blood-spattered rooms all looked the same. The victims, all the same. The one difference was Sophie, the only witness, the sole survivor. I'm really glad that you're here with me, Tom, she said one afternoon later that week. We sat side by side on the sofa in her new apartment on Avenue B. She reached for my hand. I don't think I'd be able to get through this without you. She gazed longingly into my eyes. I kissed her then and there, a long, deep kiss. I couldn't help it. Another agonizing week passed with no breaks in the case. The only saving grace was that I spent as much time as I could with Sophie. Well, I better get going, I said as I buttoned my shirt. They're waiting for me downtown. I miss you already. I'll call you later, doll. I stepped out of the brownstone and into the drizzly afternoon. It was only 3 o'clock, but it was already getting dark. I glanced up to the sky as I turned up the collar of my overcoat. Winter was coming early, for sure. I slid behind the wheel of the car and pulled out into traffic. Dispatch came over the radio. Car 210, car 210. See the manager at 1226 Stuyvesant. 10-100, possible 187. Code 3. Jesus Christ, I'd been dreading the call. Another dead body, possible homicide, and they called me, so that could only mean one thing. 11 Red Roses. The manager at 1226 Stuyvesant was an older woman. She led me to the second floor apartment. O'Malley was already there. Same MO. Body was cold. I turned to the manager. Do you know when the flowers arrived? Yesterday morning, I think. Did they run out of red? This was no longer funny. Lady, there's a dead body on the floor covered in blood, and that's what you ask me? Don't you read the papers? Just wondering is all. Say, you don't think this is related to that Red Rose guy, do you? We'll call you when we need you. We all convened at the precinct about 7:30 that night and worked straight through the next morning. Checking and cross-checking, double-checking. There were 11 murders now and a lot of information to sift through. Again. The boys and I worked around the clock, consuming stale sandwiches and downing gallons of black coffee, chain-smoking Pall Malls. Around midnight, I was going through number 7's file again and noticed something in the incident report. I rubbed my bleary eyes and peered at the scrawled remarks. That's odd. I picked up number 1 again and studied the report. Why hadn't I noticed that before? The jangle of the phone jarred me back to the present. Detective Sergeant Pullman. Tom? Sophie? Is everything all right? I was going to call you when you got off work. I just got home. The manager had something for me. Tom, I'm scared. My blood ran cold and the back of my neck tingled. I was afraid to ask. What, Sophie? They didn't run out of red roses, Tom. They ran out of white. Stay with the manager. I'll be right there. I jumped to my feet. Jackson, you're with me. We raced to Sophie's place, siren wailing. The manager was waiting in the lobby. Are you here for Miss Broussard? She went up to her apartment a minute ago. What? I told her to wait with you. We drew our service revolvers and bolted up the stairs two at a time, making it to the third floor just as we heard the scream. Sophie! I sprinted down the hall, bursting into the apartment just as a shadowy figure across the room lunged at her with a butcher knife. She screamed again. Police! I shouted, a fraction of a second before I emptied my weapon into the intruder's back. I decompressed with the echo of the last shot and finally exhaled. I rushed to Sophie and held her close. It's okay. You'll be all right. She sobbed into my shoulder. Jackson knelt beside the body and rolled the dead man over. Tom? I looked down but didn't let go of my girl. There lay O'Malley in a growing puddle of blood. He was always the first cop on the scene, I said quietly. Jackson stood up. He's been pissed ever since he got passed up for that promotion to detective last summer. He must have cracked. Yeah, like a walnut. There's something else, too. What's that? His sister was victim number one. A light dawned in Jackson's face. She was a dancer. That's why he was turned down. The morals clause. Yeah, we should have caught that. One detail from the first killing, lost in 10 subsequent murders. Senseless. I hugged Sophie again. Her cobalt eyes searched my face. What am I going to do, Tom? I can't stay here. I think I know a place, I said softly, just before I kissed her.
We trust you enjoyed this story, and we really appreciate you listening to this podcast and supporting the great writers featured. To further support the writers, we'd also like to encourage you to share the links to this podcast far and wide. If you're a writer and you'd like to showcase your work or talk to us about your writing on Read Lots, Write Lots, we'd love to hear from you. Please get in touch with us by sending an email to russell@bmpublish.com. If you'd like to stay in touch with what we're doing here at Blue Marble Storytellers or Read Lots, Write Lots, including upcoming events, news about great stories, and various other things, please sign up to our newsletter at either website. I'd also like to mention, we've started a new Discord chat channel to provide a place for writers to meet, chat, laugh, cry, and generally have fun in a supportive environment in which to share their love of writing. If you'd like to join our chat channel, you can find the details on either website, readlotswritelots.com or bluemarblestorytellers.com. Well, that's it for this episode. So on behalf of Deidre and myself, until next time, thanks for listening and bye for now.